You're listening to Radio Influence.
He got him in the white trunks.
He heard it.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count.
Wow.
And here's the submission. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big.
He's out. Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
UFC Fight Night 117 and Bellator 183 took place this past weekend, and we are going to recap both those fight cards here on this episode of the MMA Report post-fight podcast on Radio Influence. We're going to tell you who our three stars of UFC Fight Night and Bellator 183 are, tell you the most surprising moments of both fight cards, and talk about fighters' stocks that rose in defeat. But of course, we are brought to you by Fight TV. Fight is your number one source for MMA boxing and pro wrestling video. Watch MMA wrestling and boxing live on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV, using just the Fight app. You can download Fight free today by going to fight.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is fight.tv/radioinfluence/. Of course, I always have the ACB cards. And coming up later on this week on the MMA Report podcast, I'll be joined by Christos Yagos, who's going to be a part of the next ACB card. Going to be talking to him prior to heading over to Russia. Daniel, UFC Fight Night 117 didn't have a lot of buzz about it. Main card, really, I mean, it did deliver. Bellator 183, went off as advertised. A great fight card there. And let's just kind of start off. You want to talk about the three stars. You know, if you're a hockey fan, you know, at the end of the game, they do the three stars. I like to do that here on the post-fight show. Number one, I think you could easily go Jessica Andrade, but I'm going to go Gokhan Saki. An unbelievable knockout that he had there. A very good fight between him and Enrique da Silva. Give a lot of credit to Enrique da Silva for having essentially a kickboxing matchup for the most part. But for me, my number one star is Gokhan Saki.
There's so much anxiety and pressure to make a great first impression in this sport, especially for a fighter who's known for one discipline, and Gokhan Saki certainly deserved it. I'm just looking forward to the next time he fights, and I think he did real well in his initial effort. My first star, you mentioned her, Jessica Andrade. Oh, man, this was incredibly surprising. I expected this fight to be a close one in which Claudia Gadelha wins, because Claudia's kind of established herself as a fighter who, if she goes in the cage and the other person in the cage is not named Joanna Jędrzejczyk, she will win the fight. Mm-hmm. That was not the case. Jessica Andrade did a great job, specifically with her pace, specifically with her slams on Claudia, not getting sucked in into losing grappling battles. And I thought Jessica Andrade did a whole lot. Having experience with Joanna already, it's unlikely her next fight is a title shot, but it could be, because there really isn't anybody other than Claudia Gadelha that you could beat. Not name Joanna Jędrzejczyk, that would be as impressive as what Andrade just did.
How about Andrade Shevchenko in a number one contenders fight?
Andrade Shevchenko.
Oh, Shevchenko. Excuse me. She's going to 125. Excuse me.
Yeah,
125.
Yeah. Although
that would be a great fight.
That would be a great flyweight championship fight. I'll tell you that, because it's not like Andrade. You know, Andrade was a 135er.
Yeah.
So
she's a big 115er.
Yeah, a big 115er. And in all likelihood, that could very well be a flyweight championship fight down the line. But I guess someone that's in that role, like, I guess, would be a Tisha Torres.
Yeah.
For Andrade. But yeah, man, Andrade Shevchenko, if Jessica goes out there and fails in another attempt to dethrone Joanna Jędrzejczyk, I think it's very likely her move eventually will be 125. But simply put, this was her best effort.
And Andrade's performance, the way, you know, she went out there, to me, that was my most surprising moment of all this weekend. I just did not see that coming. Even had a friend of mine who texted me, who rarely texts me about MMA. He was watching it, was absolutely, loving the fight. I mean, just the pure domination there that she showed in that matchup, really, to me, the most surprising moment for me. You know, we'll get back to the three stars here, but my number two most surprising moment was probably just the jiu-jitsu domination of Gochi Yamauchi over Adam Piccolotti.
Yeah, I thought if this fight hit the ground, as good as Yamauchi has kind of showed himself in these scrambles, I thought Adam Piccolotti was, if he wasn't going to get a submission, certainly not going to get caught in one. And Yamauchi locking on the choke and taking him out, that was those two moments are certainly the most surprising. I would still go with Andrade, and if there was anything else that was surprising, I don't know if there was, because it did seem like a lot of this card went to chalk. I guess you could go with something like, we saw a UFC main event and the amount of significant strikes landed was zero. There were a few actual strikes landed by Ovin St. Preux, but yeah, a UFC main event between Ovin St. Preux and Yushin Okami. Zero significant strikes. That does not happen too often.
Do we just rename the Von Flew choke to the OSP choke?
He's had, what, there's been three. Either five?
He owns three of them.
And there's been either five or six. I can't remember how many. But either way, he either has 50% or 60% of all Von Flew chokes in the entire history of the UFC. There's a long-form article out there about why OSP loves the Von Flew choke so much. I wonder what his, like, it's impressive that he was able to lock that choke on a fighter in Okami who's built a reputation throughout his entire career as his strength being his grappling. I mean, that's where he wanted to take the fight down. He attempted the takedown, and to get caught in the Von Flew choke, there has to be some level of genius to OSP's mastery of the Von Flew choke. This is not a choke that I think we expected in 2017 to have a renaissance. And it appeared to be something that a fighter could take over an inexperienced grappler and take advantage off of the takedown. But I really have no idea why OSP has a fascination with it, how he is so successful with it. But simply put, he's really successful with the Von Flew choke. And it may be the thing that will cost him losses later in his career is the only thing he cares about is the Von Flew choke. Because, again, if he did not get Okami in it, he literally landed zero significant strikes up until that choke.
Yeah, I mean, just, Yushin Okami, you know, he wanted to get the fight to the ground, gets the fight to the ground, but OSP, you could see the size difference on fight night between those two guys, and we talked about that on the preview show. Going back to the three stars, my number two, no question, I went with Andrade with Gonzaki, number one. Who is your number two star?
Man, number two would have to be on Bellator's card, would be Paul Daly, because it's more says about the matchup that he had with Lorenz Larkin, who I have so much respect for as a welterweight. And for Paul Daly, it is very valuable for him to come out here and get a quality win at this point in his career to kind of reestablish himself as a solidly top 10 welterweight in the world, which is actually not something I believed he was. There was a part of me that thought that he may have been a bit past his prime and was kind of banking on his stand-up skill set to get some solid wins. But this was an absolute quality win, an absolute highlight reel knockout. And the thing about Paul Daly is he does so much outside the cage that he may in fact be like the Bellator MVP this year, because he has created buzz for his fights. He's created buzz for his Lorenz Larkin fight. And immediately after that, he's already beginning to create buzz for his fight against Michael Page. And prior to that, the fight against Rory McDonald was one that we were looking forward to. So Paul Daly would be the second star of the weekend for me, just because of how great his knockout is and how important his fights seem.
Yeah, I mean, you're Bellator. You, and I asked Paul Daly what he thought the percentage of a fight versus him versus MVP what would take place, and he said 99%. He feels this fight's going to happen. Clearly for Bellator, that is a fight you've got to do in the UK. You know, you keep hearing beginning of 2018. I mean, that would be a huge fight for Bellator. A question we did get, we'll get to both parts of this question from Brandon Guzman, asking what was, you know, next for the winners, also talking about what's next for Lorenz Larkin and Benson Henderson. On the Lorenz Larkin aspect, it's kind of crazy. You think about this guy, he's 5-5 in his last 10 fights.
Yeah, he is. And it's unfortunate for Lorenz, because I think a big reason for that streak is tough matchups. And those losses aren't too terribly bad. So, I mean, some of those losses happened at middleweight. But if you look recently, his losses come up against fighters who are very clearly better stand-up fighters than him, technically. Daly, Lima, and I guess Albert Tumanov to an extent. But when you look at Lorenz Larkin's resume, and recently with victories over Neil Magny and Masvidal and Ponzinibbio, that tells you that if he doesn't get matched up with a top-level striker, he's likely to have success. So I think what we're saying here is Lorenz has fallen into a bit of a hole here at 5-5, two consecutive losses. I think Bellator would do themselves big favors to put him in a position where it's a bit of a showcase fight and allow him to get his first Bellator win, because he has not got his hand raised since August of 2016.
Looking at the Bellator welterweight division, maybe a fight against Chidi Njokuani makes some sense. I mean, two strikers. Maybe it's a Ricky Rainey, maybe a Fernando Gonzalez. I mean, he's got to be in a main event, co-main event type spot. There is some options there, but obviously I think if you're Bellator, you're trying to build up Lorenz Larkin, Paul Daly, we all know Michael Page is definitely the route you want to go there in terms of who they should fight next. My number three star, I'm going to go with Aaron Pico. Obviously heading into Bellator 183, kind of the thought process of what will we see with Aaron Pico. He was still aggressive, but he wasn't that over-aggressive fighter that we saw in those 24 seconds back in June. And, man, what a left hand he landed. Ended the night for Justin Lin. Big win for him. But also, I love this post-fight interview. He was just very, I'm going to take my way. I'm going to take my time. So it is still going to be interesting to see how Bellator match makes him. But, man, I mean, those hands were on display. Everyone talks about Aaron Pico, the wrestler, but a lot of people forget about, his amateur roots in terms of boxing. To me, that was my number three star.
Hey, man, that's a great one, because he got the monkey off his back. He faced a quality opponent early on in his career. And Justin Lin, that is a very quality opponent for any 0-1 fighter. I guess Gokhan Saki could say the same about him. It's almost like these two fighters mirrored each other. But I thought between these two, Aaron Pico was a bit more impressive, just with his raw round in nature. The ability to take down, get up, and dominate on the feet was just kind of what we were promised in his initial outing. My number three star, as much as I want to give it to Juicier Formiga with the quality win over Sasaki at flyweight, getting that submission victory, that was more impressive than who I'm going to award my third star to, but I've got to, without a doubt, award my third star to Tiruto Ishihara, because he went into that featherweight fight and got his hand raised after getting hit in the nuts three times. And he didn't just get hit in the nuts. He got slammed in the nuts multiple times. This is a man who I think has been defined by his nuts throughout his career. And the ability to go out there, get hit head on, and win the fight is why Tiruto Ishihara is my third star of the weekend.
Yeah, in terms of an honorable mention, I'll throw in Gochi Yamauchi, also throw in Ovince St. Preux, just the fact of getting another Von Flue choke there. But in terms of the fighters that stock that rose in defeat, no question, it's Javi Ayala. You look at what he was able to do there. I mean, look, Roy won the fight because Roy was able to keep the fight on the ground. But, man, when that fight was on the feet, Javi Ayala was landing some great strikes. So, to me, his stock rises, and I think you see Bellator try to even push him a little bit more.
Yeah, I think so. I think he really forced Roy Nelson to go to the grappling. And that's probably not what Roy expected. I think Roy, in his best-case scenario, is to go out, entertain, get an overhand right knockout. Ayala was not allowing him to do that. Ayala stand-up is something that I think I've taken for granted as I've made jokes about picking him, but he's no joke. He is a very quality heavyweight. If they do the heavyweight Grand Prix, if we're talking about eight heavyweights, I think he has slotted himself in a real nice slot where I think he kind of cracks that Grand Prix at that 7-8 spot. Bellator would do themselves favors by promoting him more, putting him in a nice position. I think he's earned it. And there aren't too many fighters on this card that upgraded themselves with in a losing manner. I mean, you could point to a UFC, and there aren't many either. The one I would go towards would be Alex Moreno against Keita Nakamura. He lost a close fight, but he came across really impressive with his stand-up and volume of strikes. But out of any loser, the biggest winner had to be Javi Ayala. I'm not super sure what Bellator does with him next, Jason. I mean, what would you do if you were Bellator?
Man, I mean, you know, I've got the Bellator heavyweight roster right in front of me. I mean, there's no names that maybe stick out to put him up against. Maybe you put him on a California card, maybe try to get him up against California heavyweight to kind of help build him up a little bit for Roy Nelson. But I think for Roy on the other side, I think there's a ton of options out there. I think Fedor's got to be one option you got to think about. Sergey Kharitonov has got to be another one. You know, maybe even Bobby Lashley. One option, I just pray they don't go down. Do not do Roy Nelson, Chet Congo.
Yep. That sounds like that's the cure to insomnia. And that fight, ooh, I'm getting jitters. I mean, that's a fight we will likely see because the cream rises to the top. And at some point, if you continue to win, you will fight. But with Roy Nelson, Bellator needs to be smart with him because he is a bit of a character, a guy a lot of people know. And that Fedor fight makes a lot of sense to me. I that's the one I would go towards. Bobby Lashley, like you said, would be number two. And then at that point, I don't know. I think though, what we saw out of Roy Nelson is he has a few things in his skill set still. He isn't particularly past his prime. So I wouldn't be surprised if he has a lot of success, but I do wonder how he would handle a fight like Bobby Lashley, where I think Bobby certainly will have the advantage in the wrestling. And what happens if Lashley takes him down and stays in top position? What does Nelson offer off of his back? So I think the biggest fight that could be made would probably be the Fedor fight. The Lashley fight's another one. And then I think a war of words between Matt Mitrione and Roy Nelson wouldn't be too bad one day.
Yeah. You know, the main event at Bellator, very close fight. I mean, it's not a robbery either way. Very close fight. You look at... It's the slightest of things in each individual round, which way you go there. I did lean Patricky Pitbull, but I think if you scored the fight for Benson Henderson, not a problem. But for Benson Henderson, I mean, leading in this fight, I don't know if you saw the interview Scott Coker did with MMA Junkie, but you know, the question was along the lines of, you know, UFC fighters coming to Bellator, how they stack up, what type of things. And Scott Coker, I love what he's paraphrasing what he said. He goes, look, this isn't about UFC guy coming into Bellator. It's an individual sport. It just happens to be it's under our promotion. It's about the fighters. And to me, this is by far, you know, the biggest win in Patricky Pitbull's career. I know he wants Brent Primus next. He is saying that Brent has turned down this fight twice, but I've talked to Brent about it, and Brent said, he goes, I've only received the contract once. I signed it, turned it back, and the fight never happened. For whatever reason, it didn't happen. I think that I know Brent and his wife are expecting, so Brent's probably not going to fight till early on in 2018. I think you have to do Brent Michael Chandler. I think that's the right thing to do. It's unfortunate for Patricky, and maybe if you're Patricky, or maybe you're just hoping for an injury to Michael Chandler. But if Patricky's not next for the title fight, it's going to be kind of interesting to see what they do for him because he's clearly right there. So you know, who do you put him in there against next in a number one type contender fight? And maybe it's Gaethje Yamauchi.
Gaethje is one of the few guys you look at lightweight, and his arrow is pointing upwards, but it may be something as simple as Patricky doesn't fight. I don't know, though. It may be a fight where you give him the fight because Chandler... I guess the X factor is when Brent is ready to fight again and when Chandler returns. If the Chandler rehab is taking an extended period of time or there is a delay, or even originally without the delay, it's too long, that's when Patricky jumps in. But I think Patricky really needed a dynamic win over Benson Henderson in order to jump the line and jump Michael Chandler to get a title shot. And that's not what took place. Patricky should be proud, man. Benson Henderson, a quality win over him is good, but this wasn't an outing where if you were a consumer of the product, you watched it and thought, I cannot wait to see Patricky dethrone the champion. He showcased a real solid stand-up, did a lot to not allow Benson to take it down constantly. And I think Patricky's in a weird place in a division where there aren't too many fighters coming off with a lot of positive momentum. And I think Patricky at this point is in the third slot among the lightweights with the champ and then Chandler 1-2 in a rematch that needs to happen. So I really don't know what to do with Patricky. My best guess would be just to be patient and see how long it takes for Chandler. And then for Benson, I mean, what do you do if you're Benson Henderson? maybe the answer is apply to fight in a sport where decisions aren't given, because this man has been a part of 6 split decisions in his career. That is an absurdly high number for a guy who has fought less than 600 times. Like, 6 split decisions. He made the comment after the fight that he's going to take that initiative to no longer have close decisions, but I think it's hard for a fighter to say one thing and then do another. It's just, that's just the style of fight that you have.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in terms of what's next for Benson Henderson, just looking at the Bellator lightweight division, Derek Campos kind of sticks out to me. He's won 4 in a row. You know, he's right there in title contention. Maybe it's a Brandon Gertz. Maybe it's a winner of Zach Freeman's side of WAD that's coming up. I mean, to me, there's still a lot of options for Bellator and Benson Henderson.
Yeah, I mean, for Derek Campos, you could even match him up with Patricky Pitbull. I think that may have been the name I was missing. But for Benson, I think that makes a lot of sense. For Henderson, you likely are not going to get this big money matchup. The only big money matchup you can do, I don't know, Henderson-Thompson, but Thompson, I'm not super sure where he is when it comes to like actually competing again. So for Benson, it probably is a Gertz deal, a Freeman Awa deal, because I think for this next fight, having lost twice in a row, it's about rehabilitating his image. And there aren't too many name fighters to do so against. So he's probably going to be the A-side against a lesser-known fighter trying to capitalize off of his name. And I think that's the formula you got to go with Benson Henderson. And keep in mind, this was a close fight, one in which he didn't look terribly bad. It's just, I think this fight was defined by not a whole lot of aggression from either fighter.
Yeah, it was, I think it just shows us 2 elite fighters and, you know, it's just one little minor mistake you make and the other guy can capitalize. You know, we did talk about OSP and his win over Yushin Okami, of course, was supposed to be a rematch against Shogun. That did not happen. Obviously, Okami will get another fight in the UFC. I guess the question will be is, does he go all the way back down to 170, or maybe does he go to 185? But when you look at OSP and kind of where he stands, I mean, to me, if I'm Bellator, I think you try to rebook the rematch with Shogun.
UFC.
UFC, yes.
Yeah. Although Bellator very well could do the trilogy fight. But, yeah, man, other than that, the most realistic option for St. Preux is to wait for a top-light heavyweight to actually lose a fight or book him against somebody who he probably won't get too excited about. You go to OSP's office and you put Ilir Latifi on the table, he's just going to cry with sadness. So it seems like the perfect dancing partner is the one that ditched him at the dance, Shogun Hua. Until someone loses a big fight, like Volkan or Gustafsson, I think OSP and Shogun is likely the fight to make, just because it makes the most sense. It seems like OSP's found himself in the middle of the 2 tiers of the light heavyweight division at this point. You have the top tier, and you have kind of the middle ground of fighters trying to climb up the mountain.
Yeah, I think the question with OSP is you wonder, has he reached the peak of where he's going to get?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is he always going to be like that number 5, number 6, number 7 light heavyweight in the world, and he's never going to be able to crack the top 4?
Well, the thing is, if you look up and down the top 4, I would feel real bad about OSP in a fight against Gustafsson. I would feel pretty bad about OSP in a fight against Teixeira. In fights against Volkan Ozdemir and Jimmy Manoa, I think OSP has a real shot to win. I'm not super sure if I would pick them. I think Manoa would light up St. Preux. I also think Ozdemir would do the same thing.
Oh, remember, Manoa's already beat him.
Yeah, but I also think if you see a fight hit the ground, Manoa may find himself in a Von Flue choke. I think in a rematch with Manoa and St. Preux, the grappling edge would absolutely go to St. Preux, although I'm not super sure that St. Preux would take him down. So essentially what I'm saying is for Ovince, he doesn't have the talent level to be a surefire top 4 light heavyweight, Jason. But I think there's an aspect of his game that is so good when you compare it to some of these guys in the top 4, you can see a realistic scenario where he can go out there and win. That being said, I can't really see a realistic scenario where he beats Alexander Gustafsson. So I guess that's where he stacks up. Maybe if he gets lucky, he can get in the top 4. But And I'll likely this at number six or eventually number five, that's where it's at. I mean, in a rematch against – if they redo the Shogun fight, I guess we have the bias of having seen St. Preux just fight in Shogun's on the DL. But I think St. Preux would be the smart pick.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to kind of see what the UFC does do there with OSP. Takanori Gomi once again loses against Dong Young Kim. Knockout in the first round, 1 minute and 30 seconds. I can't see the UFC bringing back Takanori Gomi.
Yeah, I couldn't see it four fights ago, and they did it again. I don't know. This fight was sad. Kind of an early stoppage, but I'm not going to complain that much because it was Gomi. You know, if it was a younger fighter, I would probably complain slightly. But anyways, kind of a bad stoppage. Gomi, this is incredibly sad, incredibly predictable. Getting knocked out in 90 seconds by an opponent he had no business getting knocked out to. But the maestro, Dong Hyun Kim, one of the fighter that stock rised a little bit, but it's hard to feel great about him because I think we all know that Takanori Gomi at this point is just a ghost of himself, and it's really sad to see. This sport is the absolute most brutal sport to age in, and Gomi's one of the – I mean, this has been a bad, bad weekend for great Japanese fighters. Masato Hirota is not necessarily a legend in Japan like Gomi, but that was really sad, the whole deal with the weight situation. And for Gomi, this sucks, man. This really sucks. And Takanori Gomi, if he fights, it should be in these weird Japanese cards where he's a minus 20,000 favorite against like a rapper turned fighter, something like that. This is dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, it has Ryzen written all over him. You mentioned a little bit about Jussie Formiga, big win for him over Sasaki. When you look at Formiga, clearly one of the best flyweights in the world, you look at his losses in the UFC, they all have something in common. They've all challenged Demetrius Johnson, and that is John Dodson, Joseph Benavidez, Henry Cejudo, and Ray Borg, who challenges DJ here in a couple weeks at UFC 216. As you look at the flyweight rankings and what makes sense, I mean, you look at the guy that's right above him, number four, a guy he hasn't fought in Sergio Pettis.
That sounds like a number one contender's fight if I've ever heard of one. I can't believe Formiga's never fought Demetrius Johnson.
He's always been like that one fight away from getting a title shot, and he just can't get that victory to secure that shot.
Man, that is a fight I did not realize had not happened. You're right. Every time he's in the fight away. And I think if you match him with Sergio Pettis, he may very well be in the exact same situation. That's a hard fight for him. But when the flyweight division was announced, let me look up the top 15. The only other guy I can remember being a part of the picture at flyweight prior to like DJ moving down, Benavidez moving down, was Formiga and Ian McCall. These were the top two. These were the top two flyweights in the world. And at that time, I think Pantoa was even a prospect. But that would be a hell of a story where a couple years into the UFC flyweight division, a guy on Juicier De Silva, Juicier Formiga, crawls his way back up to a championship fight. He is incredibly well-rounded, incredibly slick grappler. Lost some parts of the stand-up, and he will certainly lose a lot of the stand-up against DJ, but yeah, that's a fight to make down the line. And Pettis Formiga makes a lot of sense because I think the guarantee for the UFC is you're going to get a new challenger for Demetrius Johnson. Now, it may be too little too late because DJ may find himself fighting at bantamweight, but Pettis Formiga, I think that's what you got to do. If you're the UFC and you find yourself flyweights that have never fought Anthony Pettis, you either put them in matchups where you feel confident about their ability to win, or you put them against each other so you're guaranteed at least one fresh challenger instead of matching them up against, contender killer Joseph Benavidez.
I saw this over the weekend, speaking of the flyweight title, some people kind of mentioning this. Do you have any problems with DJ Borg being the co-main event of UFC 216? It doesn't really bother me, and I feel like it should bother me.
Let me look at this card. What's the main event?
Interim title, lightweight title matchup between Ferguson and Lee.
Ooh.
But I guess part of the reason I think it doesn't bother me is I feel that Ferguson and Lee will do a 1,000 times job better promoting their fight and the trash talk aspect than we'll get out of Johnson and Borg.
God. Well, the reason why it bothers me is because I had to ask you what the main event was. because a lot of times I will always know what the main event is. Like I totally forgot that it was Lee Ferguson. And
I think part of that it's on the UFC. I think of just not getting, you know, weeks in advance of getting, you know, fight fans happy. I mean, look, I will tell you this. I watched UFC Fight Night Japan on my iPad via, you know, my DirecTV DVR on a plane. So I just fast forwarded through all the filler content and all that. So I don't know how much of a promotion they did for UFC 216, but I think a lot of times when fans aren't getting excited about fights, I put a lot of that blame on the promotion of not really getting those storylines out there to get people excited.
Yeah, I mean, I think for the UFC, the point, this may be a card where a lot of people are talking about it after it happens because it's so great. But I think everything is pointed towards Bisping GSP, and that's going to be the next event.
Yeah, I mean, you have three title fights on that card. I mean, that is for people who sit there and are selective about the pay-per-views they pay for just because, you know, the financial aspect of it. I mean, it's not cheap to go out and get all these pay-per-views. If you're sitting there saying, you know, hey, I can't afford to get every pay-per-view, UFC 216 is probably a card you're going to pass on, and you're saving your money for UFC 217.
Yep, that is it. And I guess the problem here is you can't have too big of a problem because fights, pay-per-views headlined by Demetrius Johnson don't do well. I don't know if this one will either. But the biggest problem is, man, the interim title means nothing in the UFC anymore.
No, it
really doesn't. This fight doesn't feel like a championship fight. The more and more I think about it, the more and more I think Johnson Borg should be the headliner, even though I'm sure they made plenty of great Ferguson Lee posters. But, yeah.
Look, I think that plays a lot into it as well, the fact that they have spent so much money already for the pre-marketing of everything from, you know, the various aspects that promotions have to do. I think that does play into it.
Although, Jason, here's the deal. Think about it this way, though. If you're promoting Demetrius Johnson as the best fighter of all time, and he's the co-main event to interim title fight between Ferguson and Lee, you may do 100,000 – no, you won't. You may do 25,000 less buys if you put Johnson Borg on top. But what's the long-term communication you are making if you're sliding that fight in the co-main event? If Mighty Mouse is supposed to be not only the best fighter today, but the best fighter of all time,
I just think it plays a lot into the fact that he just has never, you know, been a pay-per-view mover.
And neither has Ferguson or Lee.
No, he has. I mean, look, I when I look ahead at that UFC 216 card, the opening match of the pay-per-view I like a lot, Dariush and Evan Dunham. I don't like the Van Zant's fight with Jessica I think that's a bad matchup for Paige Van Zant, even though, she, you know, that fight, by the way, is at 125 pounds. That's Jessica I's natural weight class. You know, Verdum Lewis, I mean, that's a big matchup in heavyweight division. You know, the FX prelims, Dukinwa and Stamen, Brooks and Lentz, there is a lot of, you know, in terms of the backstory, in terms of that between, of course, Nick Lentz recently leaving American Top Team, so that you know, does play into that as well. So you know, looking forward to seeing those matchups, and you know, you've got Trujillo Bobby Green and Lando Vannetta. Originally, Trujillo was in that match, but that should be a good one as well. But yeah, I can see this being one of those cards where maybe people tune in to the televised prelims, but just don't buy the pay-per-view.
Man, I don't know, man. I wonder what the ratings are going to be for the FXX main card.
I mean, Duke and Wall Stamen's a great fight.
It is. It's a fight where I think it'll sneak up on a lot of people who may not know how great Duke and Wall is. Because I'm sure not many people do, but I think if you turn that fight on, it's unlikely you will turn it off or look at your phone until the round's over. If it even gets there, it's a great fight. It's just, I think if you are that plugged into the sport where you are intentionally seeking out FXX, you're going to want to watch the main card. And obviously there's going to be a big drop off from like 700,000 viewers to 150,000 buy rates. But
hey, I would tell you a little funny story about the fights being on FXX. I had to call the sports bar I work for, and I said, "Hey fellas, just to let you know, we're doing some stuff, you know, promoting, UFC Fight Night on Friday nights on FXX. I had to tell him this is where it's at on the DirecTV channel. So you're not, you know, call me up at 10 o'clock or 8 o'clock and going, hey man, we can't find FXX. Where is it? So
yeah, we can find XXX. We can't find FXX. And I tell you what, this Granny Indoors 18 is really good. I need to see the first 17, but FXX, I can't find that one. Although I guess that's just the one that airs Simpsons all the time.
Yeah, and they air movies on there as well, and I think they also, you know, show replays of FX shows. And I know a lot of people, I mean, look, it's, if you have a college football game on, college football is going to air over UFC. That's just the way it works. And actually, FXX is actually in slightly more homes than FS1, and I guess the alternative is it could be on FS2, and a lot of people don't have FS2, so... Fox, you know, people at Fox are trying to make sure that these fights are available to the most possible people in terms of their cable properties. But that was the UFC fight card was on Friday night. You did mention about, you know, Nakamura split decision win over Murano as well. When it comes to the Bellator prelims, all local fighters, fighter that, you know, Bellator really had been doing some promotion for her first two fights, Brooke Mayo. She's now 0-2 after losing a unanimous decision. But we got 2 weeks until the next fight card, Daniel.
Interesting. What are you going to do in the interim?
Well, let's see here. I'll be watching college football this weekend. You know, got the Bucks are at home the next 2 weeks. We play on Sunday against the Giants, and then a couple days later on Thursday night, we have the Patriots. So the weekend of UFC 216, I'm off. It's one of those weird weeks of the schedule.
That is insane, man. I'm very excited that you can sit down at home and watch it.
I think we're debating on that Saturday night is FSU Miami up, and so we're talking about going up to that game.
Well, it'll be interesting because surely FSU will still not have a win on their record.
You know what?
How'd that feel, man? 27-21 to NC State.
The only good thing is because we did not have ABC on the plane, I could not watch it.
Yeah.
I totally forget what game I was watching on the plane, but I was seeing the crawl, and you know what? I wasn't shocked, I'll be honest with you. It's just, you know, you talk about a freshman quarterback. NC State's just one of those teams in the ACC always gives FSU a struggle. It's tough when you lose your starting quarterback and pretty much the heart and soul of your team, you know?
Yeah, man, it is actually. That really does suck because DeAndre Francois was awesome. And it's hard to start out a freshman. Jimbo Fisher is kind of a quarterback guru, or maybe he just does a good job of recruiting quarterbacks. But
it's a little bit of both.
But, I mean, that Wake Forest game is a hard one to get your first win in because you never thought you'd say that about Wake Forest, but they're 4-0. And their coach is a good one. I wish you luck, but... Ooh, that Miami team starting to look real good with Mark Richt.
I would tell you this though, you know, I see various things on social media, and when I see like lower teams tout up their ranking in the AP poll, my response always is, you do realize AP poll does not mean anything these days, right?
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of teams.
It has zero meaning now.
You're right. It's I mean, look, Miami's got two wins, and it's over Bethune-Cookman and Toledo. It doesn't say a whole lot. Although if they do beat Duke this week,
yeah, it's on. That's why I got so no weekend this no MMA this weekend. So I mean, what are you doing?
Ooh, what am I doing, Jason? Well,
probably eating a lot of chicken wings.
Eating a lot of chicken wings in the interim, figuring out how to run them off. Wednesday we have the Houston Dash coming down to the Rio Grande Valley, so I'm going to work that game. They're the women's soccer team. I think Carly Lloyd's on the team from the U.S. women's soccer team. Maybe she's not. I know – oh, man, I don't know how to say this without being sexist. The partner of J.J. Watt, yeah. If I say J.J. Watt's girl, I'm just going to find her name. But J.J. Watt's girlfriend is a soccer player, and she's also on that team. I'm looking that up before, Kalia Ohai. Anyways, got that Thursday, got UTRGV volleyball. Friday got professional wrestling, which I'm a cameraman for. And then Saturday, we have RGV Toros. So it's a loaded week. But, you know, in between that, I'll watch some football.
I'll say, you know what I was disappointed about? I did not know this till after the fact on Saturday night, that the Minnesota MLS team played Saturday night at home. If I would have known that, I would have gone to the MLS game on Saturday night.
The Minnesota, because you were with the Vikings. Yeah,
we were in Minneapolis. Went to the section of the town called Uptown. We started off at this bar that it's nothing but old school arcade games. Sure. So I had a little good time there. And then we went over to I would call it just a sports bar. Had a fabulous burger, and it was good. It was a good time in Minneapolis, and it wasn't cold. Like, I felt like I was in Florida.
Really?
It was like 80 degrees.
Isn't it crazy how the day after tomorrow was just like a prequel to history? Like, it was just a documentary just in the future. The temperatures are crazy, Jason. I don't understand it. Why is Minnesota hot? Minnesota should not be an enjoyable experience for you. It really shouldn't. It should be all about getting to a bar and drinking.
I'll tell you, that stadium is unreal.
What makes it unreal?
The glass enclosure. So, in a dome, you're not thinking of all this, sunlight coming into it. So, but because of the, I think like half of its glass enclosure, the other half is permanent structure, where so all the sun just comes into the stadium. So it gives it a very outdoor feel to it. Yeah, even though you're indoors. I mean, just a huge stadium. Fans are as loud as they were in the Metrodome. But that was a cool stadium. Of course, that's where the Super Bowl is going to be this year, which, of course, I'm sure, first week of February, it'll be like 2 degrees in Minnesota.
Yeah. I don't know how many people will be going around Uptown that outside. I'm glad they're going to the cold weather city, because more often than not, they will go to a southern town, a Texas town, a Florida town, New Orleans. But every once in a while, I love changing it up. And I bet it seems like every time they do go up north, you always have the puff pieces about how great of a venue it is. It's probably not that great compared to, I don't know, Miami. But I'm sure it'll be like, come on, like Minnesota, it ain't Miami. The big three didn't star at the Timberwolves for a reason. But And the NBA, I tell you what, they do a good job of keeping themselves in the news. Like every day I check ESPN, there's a new star player going somewhere else.
Yeah, it's but none are going to the Magic, though.
Well, you have to have one at first to get one.
That's a good point, Daniel. Good point on that one. But yeah, yes. It's that's one of the things, like, going on the road, I love to be able to go out there and, see various sporting events. Our next road game is actually Phoenix, so we're planning to go to the Phoenix Coyotes game. That's Saturday night. They're playing a home game, so we're planning to go out there for that one. That's one of the good things of being able to travel. Go out and see sporting events that you normally can't. I mean, obviously, you're in Tampa, I can go to a hockey game, but go to another place to watch a hockey game. So looking forward to that. I'm home for the next 2 weeks, and then it's 6 of 8 weeks on the road.
That is the grind, man. Every time you have a point of rest, that's just it's a down payment on whatever you're going to pay up for in the future.
Yeah, it's so we'll not have a preview podcast till next week for UFC 216, also Bellator 184, which will be Dontas and Caldwell, also Strauss and Sanchez. So a nice little fight card they got there in Oklahoma. So we'll have a preview podcast coming up for that next week. Coming up later this week, we'll have a next edition of the AmeriFort podcast. Right now, putting together the entire lineup, but right now I will tell you, one of the guests I will have on is Chris Sosiagos, former UFC lightweight. He's got a fight coming up in Russia for ACB, so I'll talk to him. And of course, I always put out my lineup on my Twitter account at Jason_Floyd. Of course, you can follow Daniel on Twitter at DanielGalvonDGT. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Post Fight Podcast, which you're after every UFC and Bellator event on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer, Quick Fix, on Radio Influence.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Glenn Gilberti, a.k.a. the Disco Inferno. So getting back to your booking extraordinaire, some of the fans that listen may have heard of some of these fabulous ideas that you came up with. But for those who haven't, or just to entertain ourselves again, and I don't say that in a fun way, Let's talk about some of the entertaining gimmicks. There was a Martian invasion that you had proposed.
Yes.
Explain how the Martian invasion was supposed to go.
Let me tell you how the folklore of this story. Like, you know, so we would meet at the Hilton on Windy Hill Road at Windy Hill and 75 in Atlanta. There was a meeting room that we would meet in, and the booking meetings would take like 7 to 8 hours. We'd meet there every Wednesday after we come home from TV. Right. So we were doing this for like weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. So one day, because we meet in the same room, same meeting room we have booked every week, I got there early, like about 15 minutes early. And they had these, you know, like those tripods that have the big pads on them, mm-hmm. where you flip the pads up, like if you're in a meeting room or something. I got there early and wrote out a six month angle of a Martian invasion angle. Okay, that would culminate on January. This is like in the middle of the summer. That would culminate on January 1st, 2001, with a pay-per-view entitled "The Space Odyssey." Okay,
I think actually, now that I think about it, I was sitting in on the booking meetings back then. I remember.
Well, will you be? Maybe. Okay, but I got there early, and then this is the thing. People think I'm. Of course, because the people there in the room know what happened, and the story kind of like grew, and I didn't deny it because like I think it's funny, but like, bro, it was not obviously serious.
So it was not a serious gimmick you were kidding around.
Bro, then this is what I tell people. If you seriously think that I would wanted to produce an angle that involved a CGI special effect with two antenna popping out of Mike Tenay's head on live TV, like he's a Martian. I go, I'm insulting your intelligence, you don't know it, or you're an idiot. You know, it's like if there was obviously a joke.
I was there for that, and I could attest. When you talked about the
two antenna puppet on Mike Day, that's the start of the angle.
No, like, but when you talked about the tripod and the thing, I instantly recalled that.
Right.
But I can attest to you were kidding, but I could also attest to the fact that there was serious conversation about I don't think it was serious about doing the angle, but there was serious conversation about like, well, what would you do about this? Or I don't agree with this, or I don't think
I'll tell you exactly what happened. So we're doing this. I'm presenting this angle like I'm presenting it to a room of like executives and stuff. Like it's an actual like presentation. I'm flipping the pages up and everything, all that. Ed and Vince Borash, and maybe you were in there, like you were popping. Terry Taylor was so aggravated, okay, because he hated wasting time. I'll never forget, Terry is completely stone-faced like he used to be the entire time. You know, it's like at work, I like laughing about this, popping, and Ed is like chiming in, asking, well, what would happen if something like, and this is like, it's not some major deal that took like a 20-minute presentation. This is 2 to 3 minutes, you know, and stuff. So the funniest thing is like, whenever I would do this, is that Ed, Vince, Borash, everybody would like go tell Bob Ryder, hey, Disco's trying to – Disco pitched a Martian invasion angle. And that'd be it. You know, and then so the story would like go – the story would like go around the room. Disco thinks – Disco wants Martians on the show. Disco wants Martians.
This is actually ironic because one of the reasons I had you on the show was so that we could talk about this at this ridiculous angle. And I knew that you weren't 100% serious. But I wanted to gauge how serious you were. Now that it's coming back to me that I was actually there, I absolutely remember that it was a rib on Terry Taylor. And as part of that rib, I was seriously telling Terry Taylor, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? But I don't know if you remember this. I was doing that not because I thought it was ridiculous, but I was doing that because I was trying to get Terry Taylor riled up because he was getting right up. So I actually participated in this nonsense that I've been shaking my head at for years.
And he'd be like, this, we're wasting time, because Terry couldn't wait to just get in the meeting and get out. You know, just hurry up and get everything done and like get out of there. And I'll never forget the look on his face. Just completely just like, he looked like if he could have like punched me in the face, he would have. You know?
I think he actually called a break.
He might have.
I think he called a break because he was about to like hit something. But see, the funny thing is I've been making funny for this for years and totally forgot that I was in there stirring the shit trying to get Terry. I was going, Terry, this is silly. Why are we wasting time on this? But just, you know, trying to get under his skin like we all did. So now I found out that I participated in this insanity. So I guess I'm just as much to blame.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.